Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Al Davis versus the NFL. The day is finally here, Raider Nation. You get to watch it tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern, ESPN's 30 for 30. Here we are back, Silver and Black Today. Hour number two, powered by our good friend Salmon Ash, the injury attorney, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Joining us now on the Newsmaker line is Ken Rogers, the director of Al Davis versus the NFL on ESPN's 30 for 30. As we mentioned, that's going to be on tonight. Ken is also a senior coordinating producer at NFL Films and the show head at Hard Knocks. Ken, thanks for being with us again. The big day's here, my man.
Oh, thank you. I am very excited for tonight. Very excited.
All right. Well, let's first talk about kind of the development of this project. How long had this project been sort of sitting in the minds of the folks, including you there at NFL Films, waiting to get done and waiting for the right time to get it rolling and filmed?
I'd say probably a good decade. Certainly after we did Al Davis's Football Life, which was really right after his passing, he was immediately given a Football Life episode upon his passing. Given his stature, how could he not be? We of course realized making that episode that there's so many more stories, so many more things we could tell about his life, and one of them was this battle with Pete Rozelle. But it felt like we needed some time to figure out when to do that. You know, what's the right time to do that? And around last summer, when we were doing Hard Knocks with the Raiders, I sort of felt like the time was coming, because I sensed a difference in the relationship between the Raiders and the league office. It felt like the animosity was lifting just a little bit between the two entities. And I think it has a lot to do with the leadership of Mark Davis and the fact that he and Roger Goodell and the rest of the owners finally solved the riddle that Al Davis and Pete Rozelle could never solve for 4 decades, really. In 1980, when the real passionate fighting starts that's covered in this film, Al Davis wants to get a world-class stadium. And that's what he and Pete Rozelle really start fighting about. And that didn't happen until now. And that didn't happen until Allegiant Stadium. And so 2020 felt to me like the end point of this story that this film covers.
Yeah, the closure on it is really well done. And we'll talk about some of the techniques you used a little bit later. But one of the things that struck me in watching the film, Ken, was, you know, this legacy and the really the brilliance, when you look at it from a football and a branding perspective with the Raiders, of Al Davis, it's often misconstrued in my mind, and many view him as sort of like this outlaw villain, right? I tend to use the word maverick, but they paint him as a villain. But in this story with Pete Rozelle, that's far from the truth, isn't it?
It is far from the truth. I think Al Davis, forget his personality, which was that of an outlaw and a rebel. His accomplishments are heroic. I mean, he's the man in white when it comes to accomplishments. He's the hero. Forget the ownership. If you go back before that and everything he did as a commissioner and a scout and a head coach would be enough to get him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But it's really the strides he made off the field that we cover in this film. Just his branding alone of the Raiders and making his mark on the Raiders, he changed what sports teams were. He developed branding. And a lot of people give Jerry Jones credit, you know, in Dallas. But, you know, Jerry learned and came to Al Davis first, when he wanted to own a team and learned about how to create a brand. And Al Davis developed that. Al Davis developed a type of downfield passing and aggressive defense that we still see today in the 1970s after the 1960s saw the Packers sort of conservative offense and defense and running games under Vince Lombardi. He revolutionized the game, bringing that AFL style of play to the NFL. I mean, on the field, off the field, everywhere you look today, you can see Al Davis and Pete Rozelle. I would say there's no two people that have affected the modern NFL to be where it's at more than those two.
Ken Rogers is our guest tonight, director of the new ESPN 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL. Ken, really great job on the film. I really enjoyed it. One of the aspects that I found fascinating was the technology that you used to incorporate both Al Davis and Pete Rozelle into the film. Could you talk to us a little bit about some of those techniques that were used to bring those characters to life?
Yeah, listen, I wanted to put I wanted to put my career on the line is what I said, jokingly. We made it very clear to the Raiders early on that we wanted this to be Al Davis's story and Pete Rozelle's story. That's it. We didn't want this to be the outsider's viewpoint. We didn't want sports writers or people who were witnesses to the story or tangential to the story to be giving their viewpoints on this story. That wasn't fair to Al. It wasn't fair to Pete to have outsiders tell a story. We had 85% of the film in our archives already of Al and Pete telling their own story. And so when it came to the framing device and bringing it to the modern day and having someone sort of present all of those archives of the past, we kept looking at each other and saying, we just want to hear from Al and Pete. We don't want to hear from anyone else. Sure, we want to hear from Mark Davis a little bit, and we want to hear from people like Brent Musburger and, you know, a little flavor from the current day, but really, it's Al and Pete's story. That's who we want to hear from. And in the, you know, 10 years ago, we might have cast actors and put wigs on them and said, go ahead and act like Al Davis. But with technology today, we were able to use deep fake technology, the sort of thing you see in Star Wars to bring Princess Leia back once Carrie Fisher had passed away, or to make Robert De Niro look younger in Irishman with Martin Scorsese's film. So we brought stand-ins into Allegiant Stadium late at night in late November, and we had men dressed as Al Davis and Pete Rozelle and had them walk around Allegiant Stadium telling their story as Al Davis and Pete Rozelle, and then digitally had the faces, the historical faces, based on footage that we had in our archives, placed on top of their faces, the stand-in's faces, digitally. Just like you would put a rubber mask on your face, we put digital masks on these men's faces. And in that way, we were able to give Al Davis and Pete Rozelle the ability to tell their own story visually. And then audio-wise, we had impressionists do the voices of both Al and Pete. And combine it all, and what you see in the film feels like Al Davis and Pete Rozelle's spirits coming back to tell their story.
Yeah, and Ken, I'll tell you, because we heard as they've seen some of the videos of your making, and of course you've seen some of the deep fake technology, a lot of Raider fans have been kind of nervous about, oh, this is going to be terrible. What if they have the wrong voice? I can tell everybody, since we've seen it already, that you guys did an amazing job with the casting of the voices. They do a great job, and you really do feel like you're listening to Al Davis and Pete Rozelle. Now, for those of us a little longer in the tooth, we remember some of these events that you catalog in this film. And I was struck by, again, by the fact that since I was younger and wasn't paying as close attention and we didn't have social media and all the digital stuff we have now, is this really was almost like a Shakespearean story. I mean, when you look at all of the things that happened around the trials, when you look at NFL owners having heart attacks right after they're on the stand, you have accusations of a fix on the jury, you have all this different stuff, and you watch this. That's one thing that's remarkable. But then secondarily, Ken, and I really want you to talk about this, the toll that it took on both these men, because everybody loves the fighting spirit here at Raider Nation. They love the fighting spirit of Al and what he meant and what he did. But it took its toll on him, which I think later in life you saw. And then the same with Pete Rozelle.
I think so. And I mean, you say Shakespearean. You know, I'd argue it's also like a modern day reality show. It's like, you know, these trials are like the real house owners of the NFL reality show, because it's insane what happened in the 1980s. And if it happened today, it would be the highest rated reality show on television. It was absolutely crazy. And it was enjoyable, I think, to both the fans watching it then and to people who love reading about that sort of history now, and certainly the Raider Nation backing out. But both men paid a high price. I think when it comes to Pete Rozelle, the price was definitely physical. He paid a deep physical price, smoking 3 packs a day, pacing up at night. And I think he lived a shorter life because of not just the lawsuits with the Raiders, but the 1980s were rough for the NFL. You had player strikes, the USFL lawsuits. There was a lot going on in the 1980s, and he took his job way seriously compared to most. And he definitely paid a toll for it. And you can see it in the film. I mean, you can physically see him wearing down. And for Al, the success that he had bringing the Raiders to where they were by the end of the 1983 season, you know, you're done 18 Super Bowls, and the Raiders had won 3 of them and had a better winning percentage than the Steelers, who had won 4 of them. I mean, the Raiders are the gold standard of the NFL, maybe of the entire sports world. And although they had plenty of good years after that, they also had a lot of down years after 1983. And you have to wonder if Al Davis was able to concentrate on football, what he loved, what he was best at, the game of football, putting together teams, putting together schemes, coaching staffs, rosters. If he was able to concentrate more on that and less on this never-ending quest to settle the stadium issues, to settle the business issues, to settle the lawsuits, what the Raiders could have been. And maybe they would have had more success on the field if this battle wasn't being fought, because he paid a lot of dues by spending his energy off the field. And again, you have to give a lot of credit to Mark Davis to sort of for ending this, for giving it a rest and saying, I'm not going to fight these battles the way my dad did. I'm not going to fight them with bitterness. I'm not going to fight them with acrimony all the time. I'm gonna get over that, and we're gonna move on, and we're gonna concentrate on the field issues and get this stadium business over with. And sure, he's done it. I mean, the stadium in this film looks incredible.
Yeah, it is. And having been in there a few times this season was amazing. And I'm sitting here at the Raiders headquarters today, and you can't but help think of what Al Davis would have thought of this facility as well. And I know, Ken, when you look at this film and when people watch it, I thought the use of the devices of having the actor stand in and doing the deep fakes on the face, I mean, it really gave me goosebumps, because you felt as though You communicated so well in the way you did the film of that sort of moving on, that peace, being at peace with that everybody's kind of finally got what they want. Pete Rozelle, you know, the league did take off and grow, and now it's this big corporate juggernaut. And Al Davis finally did, thanks to his son Mark Davis, get what he wanted, which was what he was focused on all along, was just a stadium, a state-of-the-art stadium, and a place to call home. Do you feel like finally that there's any chance in the history of pro sports that we will ever see characters like this again?
I don't think so. I think these days there's too much business involved. Hmm. You know, these were sportsmen. They weren't CEOs. Even Pete Rozelle was a sportsman at heart, and Al Davis was a sportsman more than an owner. These days, the business is way too big, and this sort of acrimony is bad for business, and business would probably come first. And there's also the fact that today, I think it would probably, this sort of war would be blown up by social media and become a much bigger deal than it did back then. Mm. And the fires would be stoked by social media and by fans on both sides of the aisle. What's crazy about this film and what I think is most touching at the end that you mentioned is, despite all these decades of going after one another, the climax of the film to me and the most powerful part is Al Davis describing the moment that Pete Rozelle retires. And when he describes it, it's extremely heartfelt. And he describes a physical embrace where they hug. And at one point, the word love is mentioned. And you can't believe that these two are talking about each other. But there's a lot of respect for each other. And you realize they've been fighting and opponents for years and years and years, but they never lost respect for each other. They never lost admiration for each other as people, even though on a business level they disagreed. And I think that would be hard to do today. I think it would quickly devolve into personal animosity instead of just professional disagreement.
Yeah, that's well said, because I think to me that was one of those lessons. You know, I look at what's been happening in the world of sports and in the general world, and how people don't often do that. It goes very personal very quickly, and respect is lost. And so one of the lessons from your film, I think, is that, which has such a wider implication than just in sports. And so I appreciate that. But Ken, I just got to tell you, man, it's a great film. People cannot miss this thing. You did a wonderful job. Your passion in storytelling and the desire to get it right is dead on, and I know everybody's going to enjoy it. So thanks for spending so much time with us today.
Oh, no problem. I'll tell you, it was a great pleasure to spend a year inside Raider Nation and inside the world of Al Davis. And I think with the new stadium and this solution now found, I hope that on-field success is soon to follow.
All right. That's Ken Rogers, director of Al Davis versus the NFL. You can watch it tonight. ESPN's 30 for 30 debuts at 9 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. Ken, have a great week.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right, that's Ken Rogers. Wow, you guys are going to love this thing when you watch it tonight. If you're not excited already, hopefully that conversation with Ken, who's a wonderful filmmaker, will get you excited. Okay, we're going to step aside for a break. When we come back, Evan and I will take your calls. Want to hear your Al Davis moments, right? What do you remember about Al Davis? What are you most excited about watching this Al Davis versus the NFL documentary tonight on ESPN's 30 for 30. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, Javon White, the Raiders linebacker, undrafted free agent out of UNLV here in Las Vegas. He's going to join us. We're going to talk to him about his rookie season. You're on Silver and Black today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a Raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black today, here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Silver and Black today. Huge thanks to Ken Rogers, director of Al Davis versus the NFL, which debuts tonight on ESPN's 30 for 30. And Evan, we both saw it, like you said earlier. I think Raider Nation is just going, I mean, they're going to want to watch it like every day this weekend.
I've already watched it twice this week, so yeah, definitely, definitely. If you got DVR, you're gonna want to make sure you record it so you can watch it a couple times.
Evan's my news hound. You said you have breaking news from the world of Raider Nation.
Yes, I've always wanted to do this. I got big breaking news here involving a Raiders quarterback.
Uh-oh,
they have extended Nathan Peterman.
There you go. There's the answer.
That's the big news everyone was waiting for, right?
Everybody pulled over for a second there, and then like, oh, okay, Peterman. Got him. Okay, so they extended him.
1 year extension.
1 year extension for Nathan Peterman. There you go. Peterman. Sorry, that was...
Gruden loves him.
Yes, he does. We'll see what he does. All right, we're going right on the phone lines. We've had some people being patient. We're going to try to get to you. Javon White, the Raiders linebacker, is coming up next here in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to go out to Raider Loke. Raider Loke, you're on with Scott and Evan. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? Great interview, by the way. I already got my DVR set, and I can't wait for tonight.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to speak on the documentary tonight. You know, A lot of people that aren't Raider fans, that they decide to watch this, they're going to see why we as Raider fans are the way we are. I mean, you just got to be cut from a different cloth. I mean, it's not for everybody. You know, every time, 90% of the time, I wear Raider gear, you know, and every time I go out wearing stuff, I get looked at different just because of the image that stuck with the Raiders when they were here in L.A. Mm-hmm. And I get laughed at just because I'm a Raider fan, just because obviously we haven't amounted to much. But I'm more than what the Raiders feel on Sunday and Monday and Thursday nights. I'm a Raider fan because of what that shield stands for and what Al Davis did for a lot of people that the NFL is still trying to fight to this day. You know, people of color, you know, I'm first generation Mexican American, so I, you know, they were the first to hire the first Hispanic coach, the first Latino coach as well, you know, the first Black coach, and then Amy Travis, the first woman in executives. And you know, a lot of fans just, they see the Raiders and it's just, yeah, we haven't really have amounted to wins, but at the end of the day, my love for the Raiders runs deeper than what they feel on Sundays. And just a quick story, you know, my wife, she's a Raider fan by marriage, and same thing, when I first met her back 8 years ago, she saw that I was a Raider fan, and she quickly judged me by the, like, don't judge a book by its cover. She let them be different, and I just told her differently. Hey, just little by little, she reeled in, and I'm starting to teach her the history of the Raiders, and now she's slowly wearing the Raiders hoodie that I buy her, nice. The Raider hats that she's wearing, and it's just because now she understands that the Raider fans is not a bad image. Yes, we may have a criminal mindset here in L.A. because of what they stand for, but at the end of the day, I told her, hey, Amy, try it. You should read her book, I forget the title, but, you know, you should read her book, and they're starting to get into it, and it's just... it's a lot more deeper than what they do on Sundays and Mondays and Thursday nights.
Yeah, Raider Loke, thanks for your call, man. And you're right. I think people who watch the, especially younger folks who weren't around, maybe you're in your 20s, and even though you're a diehard Raider fan, knowing the history and understanding it, you'll start to understand why you feel like you belong. You know, I'm always honest. I grew up a Charger fan, so I didn't like the Raiders. But then when I started covering the Raiders and learning the history, it became much more clear to me, and I understood. So just like anything in the world, if you don't have understanding, you tend to be ignorant about it. And then once you understand it, you can relate to it much more. All right. If you're on the phone, hang on. We'll get to you in just a minute. But we go out on the newsmaker line right now, and we're excited to bring in a guy we haven't talked to since camp, but he's been a little busy. That is Javon White, Raiders linebacker, number 53, of course, played here at UNLV. Javon, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good, man. I know you're in the off season here, but we wanted to touch base with you after this season. Of course, you dressed out for four games. You had action in three games, three tackles. Of course, the one I remember the most was against the Dolphins, where you shed a blocker, made a nice tackle for a loss. But talk about your rookie season and what you learned and what your biggest takeaway was.
Honestly, I just think you never know what's going to happen when you get in the NFL. I think it's one of those things that when people say, you know, you always have to be ready. I think my rookie year really showed that, you know, me being able to play, you know, more defensive snaps during the Dolphins game. And 1 week I was just on the P squad doing kickoff and all that. And then next thing, you know, I'm starting.
Yeah, and Javen, when you look at this season, you know, being an undrafted free agent is tough in the NFL. You have obstacles to overcome. You got to work hard. You work through that. You did it in a year where you had less opportunity. When you were in camp and you kind of saw, you heard coaches talking about you publicly and that they were impressed with you, when did you kind of figure out that, hey, you know what, I'm doing enough to make this squad and I'm going to be part of the Raider organization?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I never felt like that. I just thought it was like it made me just want to go harder, you know, to even get a little more recognition because, you know, like you said, I was undrafted. I didn't have a pro day. I didn't have all the other aspects other people had to have. So to hear the coaches talk about me, it was kind of more of like, okay, you're kind of getting your foot in the door, but you know, you still gotta make it to get open. And I think that was my biggest thing I was focused on, was just, you know, coming in every day and just showing, you know, I'm a ball player.
Raiders linebacker Javen White is our guest today on Silver and Black Today. Javen, you come into the league as an undrafted free agent. You spent most of the season down on the practice squad with the Raiders, but you did get your feet wet a little bit towards the end of the season. What are some of the things in your game that you're focusing on in the offseason to improve your chances of making that 53-man roster this summer?
Honestly, I just think gaining weight and just, you know, I have a year under my belt now, regardless of practice squad or on the 53, I just have a year in the NFL. And I think just gaining weight and, you know, just growing every year, I think I'll be fine. You know, I'm excited to get back to work with everybody, you know, like we are. We're in the off season. I enjoyed my time off, but I'm ready to go back to work.
Yeah, and Javen, you know, we talked yesterday with Raiders all-time sack leader Greg Townsend, and he was telling Super Bowl stories, and he was fortunate to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl as a rookie. But well, he would talk about veterans who were really there for him and kind of showed him the way. For you, who was that on this squad? Who kind of took you under their wing? Who gave you great advice that ended up paying off for you?
Kyle Wilbur was really big in my rookie year. Kyle was like more of a older brother, honestly. You know, he would help me on my bad days. He would help me on my good days. And then Raekwon McMillan, we had traded for him from Miami. He came over. He just, you know, we kind of have, we just grew a little love for each other. And they're both great dudes. And I can't say that they did a lot more than everybody else. A lot of people helped me, but those two dudes really stood out in my rookie year.
Was there anything that you learned from them that really helped you from a perspective of your game and how to prepare?
Honestly, it was more. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Yes, it was more of Kyle is he was a 9-year vet, so he knew how to take care of his body. He knew how to stay mentally in game. He just went through so many aspects in his years, so he has so much knowledge to give me. And, you know, I was really thankful for that. And with Raekwon, it was more of a mental aspect because the way he just locked in during practice, walkthroughs and stuff, his mental level and strength was just so – it was just so superior. And, you know, he helped me understand, you know, like how to lock in for a full 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, not let your mind daze here and there, just to be able to lock in, you know, it would help your game so much. So those little things that gave me, it helped me so much. You know, Kyle would make sure I was in the hot tub every morning with him and stuff. They were really good dudes, and I really was thankful to have them for my rookie year.
You know, Javen, we always hear about the steep learning curve that is there when you're making the jump from the college game to the pros. Tell us from your experience and your perspective, what was the biggest difference for you from going from UNLV to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I think just the checks and the differences we had. We had a lot of checks and stuff, and just at UNLV, we checked a little bit, but it only changed a few aspects. Our checks with the Raiders, it would change kind of the whole defense.
Mm. Yeah, that's tough. And then, Javen, when you guys, you know, being a member of the practice squad, of course, you did dress for 4 games and saw action in 3 of those. When you're on the practice squad, you're out there. I know you're fortunate. You have the opportunity to show the coaches on a daily basis what you can do and all of that. But what were some of the challenges? I mean, you're a guy who came out of high school. You came to UNLV, had a great career there. Was that mentally first too challenging, knowing you're working all that time during the week? And then you don't get to go play. How did you deal with that, and what really helped you there?
honestly, just, you know, keeping your feet right where you are right now. Mm. You know, I kind of was just, you know, just to be happy in the moment. But I know for a fact that, you know, the practice squad isn't going to be where I'm at forever, you know, and I have very big plans for myself. And for this year to go out, it just made my plans be even more, you know, realistic and understanding it. And, you know, like you said, it's hard, you know, to practice the whole week and not be able to play, but it made you kind of basically be a little more grateful when you do suit out and you do get to be able to be on that 53 for a game or, you know, for the weeks you are. And, you know, that's what I'm really looking forward to it. And I promise you, I'm coming to be better than I was.
And I believe it. And when you look at now, I mean, obviously you had a coaching change and Coach Gus Bradley comes in as your new defensive coordinator. So you're going to have to learn some new things and some new ways of doing things. And I know you guys haven't been able to meet in person, but the Zoom meetings, tell me your first impression of Coach Bradley.
I'm going to be honest. I haven't talked to Gus Bradley yet.
Ah.
I've talked to Coach Smith, our new linebacker coach, and we've talked about who he is and who I am and, you know, just general talk. And I'm excited to talk to Coach Bradley, though. But right now it's the offseason, so I guess they're kind of, you know, they're just catching up on the things. They're jumping into a great organization, so they're just trying to get their own little feet down and get relaxed and be able to talk to the players sooner or later.
Let me ask you this, too, as a practice squad player, too, but still being in that locker room with all the guys is, you know, we've heard from general manager Mike Mayock, from Coach Gruden, and from some of the players as well, like Nicholas Morrow, about, you know, making sure that guys on the defensive side of the ball are committed to the team. And you start to look at that. How do you guys hold each other accountable to one another to make sure that when everybody's out there, they're giving their best and they're focused on football?
Honestly, that is a great question. I think it's just your love for the game, period, overall. And Nick Morrow is one of the dudes that, like you said, he hit it over the head. Nick is a phenomenal story, you know, D3 cat, being able to play lineman and all this, and just to be a star in NFL and to be a baller at that, you know. So I think it's just, you know, you have to understand that you're a professional, and you have to understand that, you know, at the end of the day, you are still playing the kid's game, but it's, a lot of people would die to be in the seat that you are in. And it's just about, you know, you can't never take it for too much granted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got another one for you. Has a guy like Corey Littleton kind of talked to you at all about his journey into the league? It's kind of similar to yours. He was also an undrafted player, really had to pay his dues as a special teams player in the league and really improved and then, you know, came over to the Raiders, signed a big deal in free agency. Has he kind of shed any light to you on some of the things that maybe you need to do to get yourself, you know, into a regular player with the defense?
Oh, of course. You know, Corey's a great dude. You know, he's a great person and he's a great football player. And like you said, we do have very, very, like, similarities and stuff in our game and just in our path. And Corey just tells me, you know, sometimes good days are going to be good and bad days are going to be bad. But he was like, it's just about, you know, you just have to also think where you can be. Don't always worry about where you are right now. It's where you will be and where the future holds for you. You know, just keep working your butt off. And Corey's a shoulder that, like you said, played special teams, did a phenomenal job when he became a star with the Rams, went to the Super Bowl, and, you know, he got a big payday. And that's what, like, a lot of people go. They pay their dues and, you know, they get rewarded at the end.
All right, Javen White. Hey, man, listen, thank you so much for joining us. And from one UNLV alum to another, the best of luck, man. I'm sure we'll see you down the road as you guys roll back into camp later in the summer.
Yes, sir. Go Revs.
All right, there you go. Javen White has been our guest here. Evan, good kid, man. He's one of those guys where, not because of my affiliation with my former school, but also just he's one of those good kids that you really root for. He works hard and has really, I think, the right mindset to overcome the fact that he wasn't drafted and that he needs to work on things like size and all that.
Yeah, I love those underdog stories. Anytime there's a athlete out there who has to overcome the odds to reach the pinnacle, I cannot cheer for guys like that. So I do hope that Javen White can find his way with this team and like I said, become a more of a contributor for this team.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get right back to the calls. We got our good buddy Matt in Hoboken and Raider Dave up in Denver. We're going to get to your calls right after the break. You're listening to the Silver and Black Today, live from Raiders headquarters today with Scott and Evan here on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Oh, yeah, bringing us in, the boys from down under, AC/DC. Yes, Scott Culbranson, Evan Grote with you here on Silver and Black Today, live from the Raiders headquarters in Henderson today. Thanks again to Javen White for joining us in that last segment, and we're going to go right on the phone lines again right now and go out to our good buddy Matt in Hoboken. Matt, what's going on today on the East Coast? You ready for that big snowstorm this weekend?
Yeah, well, we already had one. We had one that was bad already last weekend, a couple days ago. Nothing but snow out here. But the reason why I'm calling is to just speak a little bit on Al Davis. Now, Al Davis is the reason why I personally am a Raider fan. And I remember watching the NFL when I was a young kid and before I really had a team picked out of who I really liked. And I always used to see this guy on the sideline and on the field wearing all white, and then his team would come out wearing all black, and it always caught my attention. And as time went on and I learned more about the Raiders and Al Davis, I fell in love with the team. And one of the reasons why the Raiders are such a great organization is because if you ever felt like an outsider or you were one of those type of people that always liked going against the grain or was different from other people, the Raiders were always your team, the team that you identified with the most. And like Steve Sable said one time, I believe it was Steve Sable of NFL Films, he says, no NFL franchise, or I think no professional franchise, is more identified with their owner than Al Davis. I mean, if you like the Raiders, it's because of Al Davis, whether you know it or not, because everything about this franchise is from him and comes directly from that man's vision of this program. Now, about tonight's special, I can't wait to watch it. I really hope they talk a little bit about what Pete Rozelle did to us in the 1983 draft, because what he did with us in terms of manipulating that Elway move and was an absolute disgrace, I thought. I thought that was an absolute disgrace, how he manipulated that Elway trade. And, you know, Al really wanted Elway, and we were in position to get him, and then Rozelle did what he did, and we couldn't get him. And you think about how our fortunes may have been different if we had Elway as our quarterback from the mid-'80s all the way up until probably close to the 2000s, how we probably would have won another Super Bowl, or maybe two in that point, because we had quarterback issues those years. So anyway, Those are my thoughts, guys. Enjoy the special.
Yeah, you too, Matt. And you bring up such a great point. I know Evan agrees with me on this too, which is the history in this thing, even if you know or if you've read a story about Al Davis and his battles with Pete Rozelle and the NFL over moving, you know, from Oakland to L.A. and then L.A. back to Oakland. There's really some just, I think, and again, using the characters, the actors with the deepfake faces and the voices, the impersonators and all that, it really helped bring it to life in a way I thought was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And I think especially, you know, you, Matt, remember more than most do, and you're a Raiders historian, I can tell by the way when you call in, is the fact that a lot of these younger fans who weren't around and understand where this all comes from, where and how Al Davis, because a lot of these younger fans, they know the end of Al Davis, unfortunately, and some of the troubles the franchise had down the stretch with him, and they don't know how he changed the game. And just like we had our guests say, He had changed the game, and every piece of the game that he changed, every tenet in the NFL that you see today, including the vertical passing game, is something that came from him, and he had something to do with at the very least. So it's fascinating, and it's something that everybody needs to watch. Okay, we are going back out on the phone line and going up to Denver. It is Raider Dave. Raider Dave is gone. All right, we'll try to get Raider Dave back on the phone. But, Evan, you know what I'm saying with that? Because, like you said, you're 37. I'm older than you are. I think when you watch the special, you just get such a nice frame. And the way they tell the story with the characters just makes it so much more real and, I think, emotional.
Yeah, you hit it on the nail there just a minute ago when you said fans who are my age or younger, you know, when I grew up in the tail end of the Al Davis, you know, run with the team as the owner. So unfortunately for me, what I remember most about Al Davis are some of the bad draft picks that he made, or the bad contracts that he was giving out, some of those poor decisions that were made towards the end there. And so for me, you know, I didn't see him in the same light as a lot of other Raider fans did. But this stuff like this documentary and a lot of the books that are out there on him have kind of opened my eyes up to truly how great he was and how influential, you know, he was to the entire league. And so, you know, I just had to educate myself a little bit more on his greatness, and I'm glad that I did that. And this film is just another way for fans to learn a little bit more about Al Davis.
Yeah, and I think the way they tie everything up, I really want you guys, and again, I'm not giving away spoilers, but I want you guys to really pay attention to how they do that. I think it was brilliant. All right, Raider Dave in Denver is back on the line, so we're going to go out to him. Raider Dave, how you doing on this Thursday, man?
I'm doing good. Just praying for my dad, who's in the hospital, who ended up indoctrinating me into being a Raider fan, and took me to 3 San Diego games in a row. One of them was the Holy Roller. The one before that was, I think, the year they went to the Super Bowl or whatever. Well, but it was
our
fantastic.
Best to your dad. Our best to your dad,
Thank
my friend.
I appreciate that. He's going to be looking forward to watching this thing from his hotel room, from the hospital room. And I am too. I don't know if it's 30 minutes long or an hour long, but I do hope, and I'll say this thing will be a big disappointment if they don't have a substantial portion of this outlining how the NFL went around Al Davis for the merger. Because whether people understand it or know it or not, the AFL, Al Davis's league, was paying college players, the best college players, more money than the NFL was offering them. And if the NFL didn't merge into the AFL, they'd have taken over. Because all the best players were starting to go to the AFL, and the style of play in the AFL was much more exciting. And I don't know if they're going to spend a lot of time on it or not. You don't have to say if they do or not, but I'm just going to tell you, after I watch it, I'll be disappointed if they don't outline this. Because this and the way they went about the merger around and behind his back is why he became such a maverick, and why he and the NFL were at opposite ends of salt and pepper for all those years.
Yeah, and Dave, they do discuss it without giving any things away. They do discuss it, but because the film is so much more about the NFL and Al Davis, that's obviously not a massive part of it, but it is mentioned there, and you'll see where I'm talking. I'll be interested to hear your comments tomorrow after you watch. Dave, again, best to your dad. Give him our best. We'll pray and hope that he is recovering quickly, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, I'm sure. Take care.
Yeah, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. The other iconic game, we were both in L.A. at the Bo Jackson game where he sprung his hip. So been to a couple of good ones.
Yeah, you've been there for the highs and the lows.
Iconic. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Take care,
Thanks,
Dave.
Guys.
All right. Welcome back. Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio. Get one more caller in quick here before we have to also tie up the show. It is H in Albuquerque. H, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, buddy.
Hey, I'm really excited about this this 30 for 30. You know, for a long time, Al Davis, when he moved to L.A., was portrayed as this greedy owner that just wanted money. But I never felt that way. It was always about him wanting to have money to get the best players because he wanted to win. It always came down to winning for Al Davis. And I just wish that he could have been alive to see his dream come to fruition with that beautiful stadium in Vegas. And I think Mark Davis has done well to perpetuate his dad's legacy. So yeah, I'm really excited about the show.
Yeah, and I think you're going to be really happy and excited. And like I said, I didn't grow up a Raider fan like you guys did, and it gave me goosebumps. I mean, especially the last you know, I think third of the film, when you start to see some of the stuff come to fruition. And not only that, but how he also, Evan, made it possible for other owners to do what was best for their team within the structure of the league. He really opened those doors.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that this film hits on is how he was a maverick in that aspect of the game as well. Getting these new state of the art stadiums, that was all part of the blood, sweat, and tears that he put into it. So again, it's just it's a great film, and I can't say enough about it. You guys are all going to really, really like it.
Yeah, I think we will, and of course we'll get a bunch of calls. I can't wait to hear the reactions tomorrow. And the thing about watching it too is, I mean, clearly it's a story with a beginning and an end because of the battle with the NFL, and then of course both men no longer being with us. But you're wanting you when you watch this film, you're going to say to yourself, even if you have been a Raider fan all of your life and been on board for 30, 40, 50 years, how many ever years it's been. You will want more. You're going to say, I want more exploration of the man Al Davis, of the owner Al Davis, of the innovator Al Davis, because that's really what you do, because you get these glimpses. And of course, it's all framed around the battle with the NFL. But at the same time, there's so many deep levels there. And you can read all the books that are out there. But I'm also hoping that maybe this film will bring about maybe some more exploration into Mr. Davis's background, into what he did. And then the vision, the fact that he was so far ahead of where the league was in thinking about what his team needed, the luxury boxes that he was supposed to get in L.A. that he never got, all that stuff. He was so far ahead of his time, Evan. And that, to me, is something that I'm not sure a lot of Raider Nation understands, his change, his scope of how he changed the entire league and how teams operate.
Yeah, and another thing that not only Raider fans, but fans of the NFL in general, and there's a lot of non-Raider fans who are going to watch this film tonight,
right,
as well, you're going to understand why it is that Raider fans feel that, why we have a chip on our shoulder, why,
yes,
we feel that it's us against the league, because it all goes back to this the stuff with the Steelers that the film points out, and you'll get a real good understanding of where Raider fans are coming from.
Yeah,
after
when I
watched this film tonight.
When I watched it too, that was one of my takeaways. I was trying to put on like a fan hat to think if I was a Raider fan like that. Well, I would, for all the talk about the Chiefs and Tom Brady, because it's a Super Bowl this week with those guys involved, I would, if I'm a Raider fan, I hate this Pittsburgh Steelers more than anybody. I mean,
oh,
really.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
So for some of your younger fans out there, listen to that. When you watch the film tonight, tell me what you think about that. All right, Evan. Well, we're out of time, my man. As always, we appreciate you being on. I know you got a new podcast dropping tonight, correct?
Absolutely. I got a guest, Austin Gale, on tonight from Pro Football Focus, putting a bow on the Senior Bowl. And, of course, we'll be talking Al Davis 30 for 30, as well as, of course, Derek Carr, trade talks, Deshaun Watson. Can't escape it.
All right, my man. For Evan Grote, for DeMond Cotton, Chris Chapman back in the studio. Again, thanks for the Raider staff for having us here out at the facility. I am Scott Gilbranson. We'll talk to you tomorrow again on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.